Tonight, I am no knight. Tonight, I am Davos the smuggler again.
Hello and welcome to Two Champs and a Chump, a Game of Thrones LCG podcast founded in 2010 by Will Lentz, myself, Brett Zeiler, and Greg Atkinson. Major props go out to FFG for putting out a great game, George R. R. Martin for an amazing product, Card Game DB for our hosting, and Josh Woodward to the Creative Commons license music you hear today. Welcome to Season 3.
Alright. Don't really like my accents on the intro. I should have stressed other things. I didn't accentuate other words.
We could just record it again.
No, that's extra work I don't want to do.
Okay, fair enough.
I mean, you have to pull me into this podcast by chains just and ropes
kicking
already.
And screaming.
Yes.
Granted, Greg really likes the chains and he keeps asking me to whip him, but you know, whatever. Actually, I did whip you in Three games. I'm making up for last time we played when I didn't win a game the entire weekend.
Well, welcome to another episode of Two Champs and a Chump. Today it is myself, Greg Atkinson, Dobler on the boards, with our consistent, constant, always there host, Will Wentz.
Also known as Kenan.
And notice I didn't even call you the chump. Okay, I just did, but still. Okay.
You could have called me a championship-level player.
Yeah, so 2 weeks ago when you came up to podcast, we played a bunch of games that day. And yeah, you did not beat me.
I don't know how many we played, but it felt like a million.
You did not beat me. And then today we played three games, and you beat me in all of them.
Yeah. Now, of course, the first one was a grindy.
What did we end up?
Grindy.
Counting like 12 plots? Yeah. And, not fun.
And neither of our decks were actually working the way
in
they were supposed
game,
to.
First game, no. So, today, I was hoping we could discuss the two new agendas that people are playing with. We're getting
the ones in the environment.
Yes.
Not the new seasonal agendas that everyone's already bitching about.
The ones that are from Song of the Sea.
Not everybody.
Yeah.
Close.
The Black Sails and the Long Voyage. Of course, a couple weeks ago, you and I were discussing the... at that point in time, the... percentages of deck and or house agenda restricted cards for people that just showed up for regionals. Okay,
right.
And you know, I think anybody that's paying attention to results is probably seeing a common theme, which is the Long Voyage. It seems to be dominating the scene a little bit. We've now seen it win a lot of regionals.
I don't want to force you back into stats, but something we noticed last week with Brett and Josh on the show, because I compiled the top X placements, right? And then I sent that Excel file to them and stuff. But I had the general population pulled up in a pane and the top X next to each other, so you could kind of compare how things shifted and stuff. And it was interesting, you know, looking at that. But then also when you look at the top X placements, you see House of Dreams, like I mentioned last week on the show, being the most prevalent. But you see it for like five regionals in a row or stuff being real popular and only like a couple people playing TLV and making the cut.
Mm-hmm.
And then suddenly there's this shift and there's almost no House of Dreams and then more TLV. So, I don't know, just interesting. But you can see it's the play has been picking up as regional season goes. It's definitely getting more popular.
Sure.
And performing better.
Well, when these agendas, I guess the which one was spoiled like before the set even came out? Was that Black Sails?
I
want to
say...
I thought it was Black Sails.
You know, it's been long enough. I almost wanted to say it was The Long Voyage, but they post like the original like announcement spoilers, yeah, and then the chapter pack spoilers, and then the like... Or, sorry, the original set announcement, then the chapter pack announcement, and then the chapter pack release. Like, it's hard to keep it all straight.
Well, I realize that we have talked about these agendas before, and there's a chance we could rehash some ideas. But what I'd like to focus on is more of a discussion specifically about these two agendas, what they can and can't do, or what they are and aren't doing for the environment, and look at that a little bit. I'm not surprised that the Long Voyage is winning tournaments. I'm a little surprised that it has so quickly become a favorite. Okay, that
depends on your definition of favorite,
right?
Yeah, favorite in the like competitive setting. Like someone is a favorite to win. From talking to a lot of folks, I don't think the agenda is a favorite as in well-liked.
No, exactly. No, but that it's already people are saying, I'm going to use this agenda, you know, to try and win this tournament.
Mm-hmm.
To take you guys back many, many years. So back in 2006, I brought a Stark Knight deck to Gen Con. And one of the key pieces of that deck was a card called Riverland Horseman, which was a four-cost Stark Knight that only had two-strength military power icon, but it said after you play
it. And he was House Tully.
And he was House Tully.
That was sometimes
response,
relevant.
After you play it, search your deck for a card, put it in your hand. Okay, I have always loved the tutor effects, the search your deck for anything. You know, obviously we have had a lot of cards that existed over the years. We even have some now that are search your deck. Most of them now are pretty specific, say like Red Warlock, search your deck for an attachment if it's summer. You know, the least specific one would probably be To Be a Wolf, you know, out of Stark, where, you know, your opponent names a card type and you can search for any card of any of the other three card types, right? I have always loved tutor effects. I feel like it is actually the single-handed strong, like, as a single entity, it is the strongest effect in the game. Okay? Like, one tutor effect, in my mind, is stronger than any one other effect. Now, someone might make an argument that a well-timed Valor, okay, but, I mean, I could then counter and say, well, Valor can also hurt you, you know?
Right.
So you got to balance that.
Yeah, once you start saying that, I mean... Your well-timed Valor, they may play Power of Blood or whatever. Like, you start running into these what-ifs,
yeah,
and you start throwing out options. A search effect, though, gives you any of those options for your what-if scenarios.
Right.
So it's the most, open-ended effect.
Right.
It gives you anything.
Well, I showed up at that Gen Con 2006 with like this almost 80 card deck, right? With the idea being, if I can search my deck, I want to have answers in there. I want to be able to deal with whatever my opponent is doing. So then several months ago, the first time these agendas came to mind, and we saw the Black Sails agenda, you know, that's my first thought is, hot dog, this is a tutor effect that I can potentially pull off round after round after round after round. And yes, I'm not searching my whole deck, but I'm searching half of it, essentially. Okay? And so I, you know, really thought once we got enough naval enhancement into the game that the Black Sails is going to be a super strong agenda, because I feel that just the tutor effect is that strong. Now, to jump ship before we begin comparing them, I also like the Long Voyage. Okay, first time I saw that, I'm like, 85 card deck. You get to draw
perfect.
An extra
That's
card.
That's the size you like to play.
Again, I like the big decks.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, now.
The bigger deck to fit Greg's hand. I don't know where I'm going with that. I'm just going to leave it there.
Well, let me ask you this. You and I, Will, we talk deck building occasionally. Okay. How often do we make the statement, oh, I'm at 85 cards, I got to cut, or maybe not 85, 90, 80, 75, I've got to cut a ton to get down to the 60 mark.
Oh, yeah.
And we don't want to cut it. It hurts because we want these cards in our deck. And the truth is that the card pool has reached such a point that you hardly lose any efficiency anymore by going from 85 to 60, unless you have a very specific combo build, okay, where you need very specific cards. At that point in time, yes, you're going to lose efficiency. But if you build a deck that essentially every card has equal efficiency, then the long voyage is your agenda and you don't even think twice.
Mm-hmm.
And so, obviously, I looked at the long voyage and I said, oh, this is going to be just a great agenda, but I don't think other people are going to use it very much because people seem stuck on the whole 60-card deck idea. I've had many discussions with people about being willing to go up a few cards, and people are like, no, I won't do it. I got to be at 60 cards.
I mean, mathematically speaking, it is better.
So I thought people would shy away from TLV to start with and go to Black Sails. And I feel like it's almost been the opposite. And, you know, I think that there's a reason why. And we'll talk about that here in a minute. You know,
Bruno won with it?
Yeah.
I mean, that gets something a lot of publicity.
Here's the biggest difference between those two agendas. Conditionality. The long voyage, the moment you sit down at the table, you have met the condition for getting that extra card every round. There is nothing you need to do within the game to pull it off. You started the game with 85 cards or more. You are getting three cards every draw phase. Mm-hmm. If your average game goes seven plots, you've given yourself seven extra cards. So you've technically dug seven cards deeper in the 25 extra that you've added. Okay? And, you know, even those seven cards, which may not sound like a lot. If I say, man, you got seven extra cards, you're not, man, seven doesn't seem like that many. But you have effectively...
And that's a full hand's worth.
Yeah, you've increased your options every phase by 50%. Instead of getting two cards, you're adding one. You've increased your, you know...
Your card advantage?
I mean, obviously card advantage, which is essentially what card advantage is. The options you have at your disposal. Okay, I mean, we played several games earlier today. You were not using TLV. No. I was using Black Sails, but I don't want to talk about Black Sails. In two of those games, you were playing Lannister, and you started those games with Golden Tooth Mines.
I was actually running the Maester's Path, which may open up a slightly different can of worms, but continue where you're
going. The point is, in both those games, you started the game with Golden Tooth Mines. Now,
On setup.
So you started the game putting three cards in your hand by the time we were done with the draw phase in each of those games. There was a slight amount of conditionality because you obviously had to spend two gold to play that card. So you technically had two gold less during the setup phase. Okay.
And there's a slight chance you could blow it up and affect it.
Absolutely. But we saw a huge difference in the way your deck played in those two games versus the third game. And even though you still beat me, that third game, when you didn't start the game with those Golden Tooth Mines, and you never did end up playing one, your deck played completely differently.
I mean, just talking about hand sizes, those first couple games, you know, I had one on setup, and then quickly, say, by turn three or so, I had a second one out, and you kept, you know, asking, oh, how many cards do you have in hand or whatever, and we had this terrible disparity where I was sitting at, what, six or seven?
Almost the whole game.
The entire game, and you were at two or three.
One or two, or maybe three. Yeah,
depending on how things had gone and stuff, versus that third game where I did not have that one Golden Tooth Mines on setup, I blew through my hand completely. By like turn three, mm-hmm. I was top decking mm-hmm. and then playing out whatever I had, trying to keep on top of where we were going. Just that one card a turn made that big of a difference in the way the games played out.
Yeah. And anyone who's played this game for any length of time will recognize that with Lannister, that starting a game with a Golden Tooth Mines that you can leave and play is huge. It's massive. I played Lannister Wildlings at the Moon Boy, and the games when I started with one or two in play, my deck just went nuts.
Yeah.
And the games when I couldn't get it, I struggled.
Yeah. I mean, over many years of playing Lannister, I couldn't tell you how many games where I've got X, Y, and Z in hand and have the possibility of that first setup being two Golden Tooth Mines and, like, a Shadow Black Lane. And I can't do anything else. And I'm like, ugh, I wouldn't have any characters. I don't really have much in the way of gold production. Do I take the mulligan? And I hate to say it, but it is almost always right to go ahead and take those two Golden Tooth Mines and diddly else.
Yeah. So, but what the Long Voyage is doing is it is now basically saying, pick a house. Play the deck that you want to play. And you're going to get that extra card for nothing.
As long as your deck is okay with running 85 cards.
Sure, of course. And you know, that's why I gave the caveat when we first start this, that if it's a combo deck or it's a deck that's, you know, built upon one or two specific cards, then yeah, you probably won't want to do that unless you have some other way to go search for those cards. But I really feel that what people are finding out is that the lack of conditionality with that it is at the core the easiest agenda in the game to get its benefit, other than Knights of All Hill, which starts with you know all of its pluses in play. But even Knights of the Hollow Hill, in some minor scenarios, you can turn some of the stuff off, okay? Like against Greyjoy Choke, they can, or not Greyjoy Choke, but Lannister has an attachment that can turn off the gold production, okay? Right. You can potentially get some burned and pillages on a location owned by a Knights of the Hollow Hill player that's going to reduce their gold and their initiative that's driven by the agenda, you know, wholly.
Right.
You know, there is nothing you can do against the Long Voyage to stop them from getting that extra card. Now, maybe there's some things you can do to try and hit their hand, but those are the same things, you know. I mean, I guess my thought is this, is that we have seen that card advantage agendas are very strong throughout the history of this game.
Yes.
And they are quite often the most played agendas in the history of this game. And, you know, as much as I love Knights of the
Most Played.
Yeah. As much as I love Knights of the Hollow Hill, in general, card advantage agenda is just stronger than it, okay? So we've got this new card advantage agenda. And it's not hard to build an 85 card deck with the card pool the way it is. Now, if this agenda came out right after the core set came out in the summer winter cycle, and that's all we had available to us is core set and summer winter cycle, this agenda would be a fraction of its power level because of the difference in the card pool.
Mm-hmm.
But it is, the conditionality of it is almost nothing.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned the card pool. Now, I don't want to get into a rotation discussion and whatnot, but we're just now approaching the size in the card pool that we're about the size of a standard card pool in Magic.
Oh, in Magic.
Okay. Yeah. But yes, they're block set. So it's two blocks and a core set.
Okay.
In their standard format. We're just now about that size. But the thing is, with their rotation and stuff, they offer a lot of reprints. It's a collectible game, of course, so there are cards, especially at lower rarities, but even at the upper rarities, that are just duds on purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, fill different roles. You know, it's okay in a draft game, but you'd never bother to play it in Constructed and stuff. And one of the big, like, selling points when they launched the LCG that they pushed, you know, as a point out to the player base is, we won't have that kind of chaff in the packs anymore. And, you know, for the first couple cycles, there were a few of those cards, and people griped about them still making it into the packs and stuff. We don't so much see them, you know, anymore over the last couple of years. And now we're feeling that, you know, if it was early on, like you said, or if there was some sort of rotation thing or a collectible thing like Magic, like, say Magic had agendas in your average standard card pool over there, running an 85 card deck like this would be radically different because there's just not the concentration of potent cards available.
Right. Right. Now, let's begin the comparison and look at black sales. Black sales in an ideal world, you are winning your naval challenge, and you are searching your hold, and you are going to be putting that card in your hand at the end of the challenge phase, so you are getting that extra card. In an ideal world, you are winning that naval challenge every single challenge phase and getting that extra card. So in an ideal world, you are having the quote-unquote same quantity of card advantage as the long voyage. Now, you could make the argument, and it's a very easy argument to make, that in that same ideal world, you are actually having a better quality of card advantage because you are searching for what you want. Okay, and you could also make the argument that it's also a better quality of card advantage because it doesn't count against your draw cap. Yeah. If you have other cards in your deck that are letting you draw, you can still get three from that and get to search, while long voyage, you're only going to be able to get two others. Okay. But here's where the biggest difference comes in, this word conditionality. I have built now three different Black Sails decks. Stark Black Sails, Baratheon Black Sails, and Targ Black Sails. And I know many people I read online have been trying with the Greyjoy Black Sails too, because they have a large quantity of naval enhancement characters. And the conditionality of the Black Sails is actually greater than what I thought when I first looked at it first.
I am a little curious, though, if some of that has to do with the houses you chose to play, since you're not playing Greyjoy, which you just said has the most naval enhancements.
Potentially, yes. When I first read the agenda, it just didn't click to me that, A, you have to win as a naval attacker. Okay, so
yeah, not a naval enhancement in the challenge,
yes,
but literally a naval attack declared through the enhancement.
Yeah, so when you just look at the agenda and you realize, A, you've got to be the attacker to be able to trigger the agenda. B, you have to have triggered the naval enhancement special effect or whatever you want to call it. Okay, just as you said, you can't just do a military challenge where you as a standard declaration, declared someone that has the naval enhancement. You're not going to be able to trigger the agenda. You have to do the special, I throw someone in as a naval attacker after the challenge has already been initiated. Okay. So that in and of itself is quite conditional. Attacker, and you got to throw someone in. And when you take it another step further and recognize the subtlety of that, what that means is you're going to have a minimum of two characters in that challenge.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, when you have a board full of dudes and your opponent has a board full of dudes, having two characters as attackers isn't difficult. Okay, it is quite common. But early in the game, where each of you maybe only has three or four characters on the board, maybe even less, or after a Valor, or after a board reset, or anything, the ability to throw two characters into a particular challenge exists, but at a cost. Okay, like, am I willing to throw these two characters in, but it's going to cost me the ability to win this other challenge or this other challenge, okay?
Yeah.
I can win the naval, and I can go search, but I'm not going to be able to win any other challenges.
Into play pretty heavily with the Tark deck.
Yeah,
I can make a power challenge in search, and then I can't make any other challenges.
Yeah, and when I built that deck, I recognized that that was its fatal flaw. I talked to you about that on the phone.
Right. It was just the most extreme end of the example, where, it really came up in the game. If I remember right, you could make the intrigue and military. You could have made both of them and actually hurt my board position.
Yeah.
And my hand, or you could use both of those guys to make the naval power you needed to go search.
Yeah.
And which is a tough position to be in.
Yeah, and that was especially tough for that Targ deck, where almost every character that had the naval enhancement is on the power icon, except for the little Pentoshi deckhand. Even Beleriand only grants it for the power icon. So that deck, it's even more, there's even more of a gap there in terms of the cost to do it. Because early in a game, like let's say I'm Greyjoy or Stark, where they've got some naval enhancements in military, and early in a game I'm throwing multiple characters at you in a military challenge, you know, I know I'm moving something off your board most likely. I'm killing one of your characters in the process. You know, early in the game for Targ, yeah, I'm winning a power challenge. What am I doing early in that game? So I'm getting the power, and power early in the game is the... you know, most of the time is the least effective thing you can do to help, you know, move you towards a win condition.
Mm-hmm. And which is funny, since power is the win condition.
Yeah. So I, you know, I just think that that particular Targ deck, you know, accentuates the difficulty of Black Sails, as you said, to one of the greatest degrees. So you have this high level of condition. You have to win as the attacker. You have to trigger the naval enhancement. You're going to have at least two characters in it, okay? And then you get to go search. Great, now you get it. And then you get the card after the challenge phase. So you, it's not like you can win a big power challenge and go get a Seductive Promise and trigger it. You know, you're having to wait. Now, it doesn't take away the fact that you're still getting to tutor. It doesn't take away the fact that you're still putting a card in your hand. It's just, what is the cost to be able to do that? The conditions are so high that the cost is high. The cost for Long Voyage, once the game starts, is nothing. There's no cost for that. You're just getting that extra card. The cost for Black Sails to trigger its tutor effect is very significant. Now, maybe over time, when we get more naval enhancements, we'll find it easier. But at the same time, the more naval enhancement characters you put in the deck, the more you are going to lose the wealth
of things you want
to search for. Yeah, the wealth of the tutor effect, which is, yeah, the more characters that have naval enhancements, the less toolbox characters you'll have in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So it in, you end up walking kind of a slippery slope. One of the reasons why I obviously liked, you know, building it out of Stark is the White Harbor Droman. The ability to turn any character at any time into a naval enhancement on any icon is phenomenal. That location is great.
I'd been thinking about that because I was going to ask you which of the three you were going to say has performed the best. Because my vote is for the Stark. Of course, you know, those naval characters can be controlled, kept out of challenges and whatnot. And I think the edge is definitely the Droman because it kind of negates so much of your opponent's control effects. Mm-hmm. If it's anything marshalling-based, it's not going to interfere with you at all. And it's got to be pretty specific open-ended challenge phase stuff to be able to get in there. So, you know, basically all you need are two characters with the same icon.
Mm-hmm.
And the Droman itself. And beyond that, you can shift that around however you need it to work to be most advantageous to you.
Now, I have had a lot of success with the Baratheon, and yes, you beat it. That was a very interesting game because when we played, I thought I was going to crush you in that game.
So did I for the first like two turns.
I forgot to play a couple early epic battles that just sat in my hand, and I kept, we'd always get to draw phase, and I'd be draw two. Ah, crap, I forgot to play my epic battle. And that definitely hurt me because I had the Shield Island ones with a naval enhancement or two on the board. So I know I would have won the epic battle power time. And I ended up topping out around 11 or 12 power in that game before your Valor hit, too. I play that Shield Island ones early. Yeah. I might have won the game. And I just totally brain farted on that. And you ended up coming back to win that particular game. But I have had a lot of success with Baratheon as well. The nice thing about the Baratheon deck is that in the right scenario, you almost don't care, too. You draw your rush guys and you rush to the victory, then you're not even caring if you do the naval enhancement. And it also, if you do play against a control player, they end up being forced to make a tough choice. Are they going to try and control your naval enhancement characters, or are they going to try and control your rush characters?
Oh,
you know, like,
tough.
If I drop out Mad of Flowers, are you going to kneel him? Or are you going to kneel my little, you know, River Runner or whatever their name is, you know?
And River Runner may not be a guarantee because of its vigilance.
Yeah. You know, but, or, you know, let's say someone was using Martell with some of their icon control. That's a better example, you know, because there is no vigilant. But yeah, who are you going to take the icons from? The River Runner? Or are you going to take it from Knight of Flowers? When, yeah,
that's
it's tough. It's tough. So that's, I do like the Baratheon deck because it, much like most of the Baratheon rush decks now, it can operate just straight as a rush deck and not even care about naval enhancement. Or it can go the naval enhancement route. And we've talked about Dale before and how awesome Dale is.
Yep.
And Dale has and the naval enhancement. Mm-hmm. So when you can get the Dale stuff going, that's awesome too. Like Seat of Power, I play Dale for free. Get my Seat of Power back, play it again, you know, assuming you haven't played a limited that turn. But you have yourself at a... you can still do all the Baratheon acceleration. You can do all the, or income acceleration. You can still do the Baratheon rush without a huge... loss of that by going to naval enhancements, because you know I'm to the point where in a normal Baratheon rush deck I'm going to be playing Dale anyways because of his income acceleration and his card advantage. And while a normal Baratheon rush deck you won't be using the River Runner, you probably won't be using the big 7 strength army, you know, those particular cards, you know, they're not horrible, they're not fantastic, but they're not horrible either.
Especially the River Runner. Vigilant is such a strong keyword in a deck like that. It helps with the rush, I think, to just keep throwing the challenges at somebody, and the enhancement's just gravy.
Yeah, and one of the cards you haven't ever seen me play against you, I don't know why, I just never draw them, is the new Davos. The one with the naval enhancement.
Oh, yeah.
And I have Salador with the naval enhancement. Right. Actually, Baratheon actually has a lot of naval enhancements. That Salador is great too because now they're going to help me win dominance because my smugglers are knelt.
The Davos, you mean?
Davos.
Salador's the location.
He's the location blower upper.
blower upper.
That particular Davos is going to help me win dominance. And then, of course, I have the Ashai, the Baratheon Ashai character that has renown that if I win dominance, draw a card. So
I actually like that guy quite a bit.
Off topic,
I guess, but I dig that guy.
Yeah, and they fit in a rush deck. They have renown and draw. You know, so you know that particular deck is done. That might be only the loss you gave me might have been my first loss with it.
Really?
Dang. Well, I should have lost the other one when we did play 2 weeks ago, and you were playing your Direwolf deck. Uh-huh. When we conceded a game around turn 6 or 7,
yeah.
Where I think you would have ended up beating
nothing was happening.
Yeah, I think you would have ended up beating me because you had several duped characters on the board. I didn't. You hadn't played your Valor yet. You thought I was playing Valor, so you just thought, oh, I'll play my Valor, and then Greg will end up playing his, and all the duped, you know, all this work I've done to dupe up my guys is wasted.
And we'll both just be back to square one.
Yeah, and you didn't know that I wasn't playing Valor, so you just kind of, let's move on. And honestly, that was one of those annoying games that we were tired with anyways when you had Dire Wolves on your end and Naval Enhancement on my end, and it was just like one of those... We would stare at the challenge phase for 10 minutes.
It was almost impossible to figure out what would happen. you just couldn't plan ahead.
No, you couldn't.
At all.
It was a headache. It was a challenge math headache where the permutations were endless of how things could end up going down. There's a couple times in that game when I would do a challenge at will. And Will had multiple Dire Wolves. And I had already calculated in my head, okay, he can lower this with Shaggy Dog. And even if I pop someone in with a naval enhancement, I can't win, you know, but I should do this anyways. And I would do a challenge just trying to force Will to use a bunch of his stuff.
Uh-huh.
And there was once or twice you said, well, I can't win. No, you were saying that defensively you couldn't win. And so, you know, it was just a mess trying to keep track of everything. So, that game we quit. But the point being is naval enhancement in and of itself is a versatile function in the game. Mm-hmm. Okay, the ability to throw someone in as an attacker or a defender, that's a great ability, okay? The ability to throw someone in even before stealth has been declared when someone attacks you. Oh, you're attacking me. Yes, I, you know, naval my big 7 strength army, you know, into the challenge and now you can't stealth him. I mean, that's great stuff. So, you know, I don't want to pretend like the Black Sails is a failure, you know, if you're not able to pull off the conditionality of it. I think that I've just come to a place of recognizing, though, that it is one of the most conditional plots in the whole game. Now, when you pull agendas. It off, agendas, sorry, I can't talk today. When you pull it off, You also get one of the greatest effects in the game. I'm searching this hold, which in most games is probably going to be 35 to 45 cards, depending on how big you built your deck. Mm-hmm. So a lot of good things in there that you're going to be able to go get to go help you.
Yeah. I mean, I mentioned it when it first came out and we were reviewing it. It feels to me like it's a fixed, here in quotes, Maester's Path. Like, they're both challenge dependent. They both need certain types of characters. They both, let you get specific effects kind of at your whim and stuff. But it doesn't seem the just surefire, no-brainer, pound things through that the Maester's Path was for so long. So, you know, take that with a grain of salt, I suppose, whether that means much in the greater context and whether that means it's effective in the current meta as a fixed version of another agenda.
Right.
Maybe that means it's a little below the curve now that everything else is pushed up above.
And the interesting thing is both of those agendas have the support plot. Where yeah. Maester's Path has at the gates. Plots. Yeah. It's a one-sided search. You know, at the gates, you're searching your deck for any Maester and naval reinforcements. You're searching your hold for any character. And that's a great plot. I love it. Problem is, I wish I could have two of it.
Yeah.
I always play it, and then like two plots later, I'm wishing I had it again. But it is. It really is a great plot. A lot of people say, well, go get the naval enhancement guy if you don't have one. Well, that's great. If you don't have a naval enhancement guy, you're going to kind of be forced to go search for it, mm-hmm. you know? But at the same time, if that ends up happening, all your opponent has to do is control. If you're going against a control deck, they just got to control that one guy, and now they've essentially shut down your agenda.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's a tough thing. It really is a tough thing. I still love this agenda, and I'm going to keep trying to make it work right now. I might have to come to the conclusion that we're not at a place in the game where we just have enough reliable naval enhancements to be able to make it work.
We've still got two more packs coming in this cycle. So, you know, depends on how many more we get. We may be there by the end.
Right. But I will also say this. Because I recognize its potential as having the greatest gross effect, like the greatest positive gross effect in that ideal scenario that we talked about earlier, like if you were able to every turn pull off the naval attacking win without having to commit all your resources, all your character resources to do it. Like, let's say you have enough characters left over to do your other challenges, you know, either effectively, offensively, or defensively, however your deck's playing, then we could at some point in time look back and say, we've crossed a threshold. We've crossed a threshold where there is too many naval enhancement characters that are really good characters that make this deck too reliable to pull off, mm-hmm. you know, to trigger the agenda. And now we're at a problem. You know, what's the fix to that? You know, when you already have an agenda that's highly conditional, what's the fix if it ever does become a problem? So I would almost rather it stay where you can't just completely fill up your deck with naval enhancement dudes to where it's so easy to pull off. I'd rather that not happen. I realize as the card pool continues to grow, we will get more naval re-enhancement characters, and therefore...
Re-enhancements?
Yeah.
Wow.
Is that what I said?
Yeah. Would that be like two of them there, little dangly balls underneath the icon?
Did I really say re-enhancement?
Oh, yeah. You definitely said re-enhancements.
Okay. So, naval enhancement, excuse me. It's just a very... To me, in my mind, I love analyzing the fine line with that agenda. And it is a fine line because you have this grossly powerful effect with a high quality of conditions that have to be met to pull off that effect.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, the Maester's Path, you know, and I think you make a great comparison with it. The Maester's Path was the same way. You have this grossly powerful effect. You're moving cards off the agenda. Cards that have good effects themselves. You're moving them off your agenda into play. So you're already getting card advantage because I'm adding a new card to my wealth of options here I have on the board.
Right.
And all I got to do is win a challenge and have a maester in play. So the conditionality.
Any challenge.
Yeah. The conditionality of that particular agenda is so much reduced. And it's even. The conditionality now is more than it used to be when the agenda first came out.
Right.
And you can move it to any maester, not a printed maester. And it's been through several erratas. I can't remember them all now, but I could swear it's been through actually two of them.
We've had some tweaks, and of course, the restricted list.
Yeah, now
tweaks.
It's on the restricted list, yeah. So I'm looking forward to the time that I do see some black sales decks that are a little bit more powerful, or maybe a little bit more successful. Powerful isn't the right word, just more successful. And, you know, I'm obviously tinkering around with it with three different decks that are using it.
Maybe you should play one and win our regional.
Yeah, I mean, I will do that if I can win games with them. Today didn't give me a large, grand feeling of confidence with it. But knowing the way I like to play, it's going to be one of my favorites because of its tutor effect. Now, I want to transition into something else. I was talking to someone else, and they were asking me, what's the answer to Long Voyage? Not like a restrict or whatever. What's the answer? Like, how can the metagame adjust to deal with it if it truly becomes that popular on the competitive scale?
That's tough. Before, I mean, jumping in too deep, looking at it, like, it's the only one of these card advantage agendas that I can think of right now that the opponent doesn't get to interact with somehow. Like,
yeah.
We mentioned the Maester's Path. Obviously, card advantage agenda. If your opponent can keep you from winning challenges, which Zyler's World Championship deck, when we were testing a few times, even before it got restrictions and stuff, I happened on a whole bunch of icon control. He won no challenges for, like, two turns and lost, right? Something like Knights of the Realm. I've seen games. I remember Fox at a Springfield Regional several years ago in a night-on-night mirror. And if you're the one with less knights on turn one, drawn one card from there on out, it sucks.
Oh, yeah, you lose.
Or even, you know, just in general. It doesn't necessarily have to be a night-on-night mirror. Other decks could just reasonably happen to have more than you or kill yours off. Let's see, what else do we have? The Black Sails, we just went over how it is possible for the opponent to gum that up. House of Dreams now has a couple different ways for opponents to interact with what you're trying to do with the agenda. But the Long Voyage has nothing I can think of.
Well, here's I think it's going to be more subtle. And this was what was suggested to me, and I think it's a good suggestion. Is that one of the counters to a Long Voyage deck is actually a combo deck. The reason being, if you have an 85-card deck, your ability to draw a specific answer is reduced. Yes, you are drawing three cards, but you have an 85-card deck. So let's say you're running Nightmares in a 60-card deck, and you run three Nightmares, one out of every 20 cards is a Nightmare. Okay, so just little statistics, if I'm drawing two cards, and I have, say, a 10% chance of drawing Nightmares, right? And, you know, in a 85-card deck, you're running three Nightmares, which means it's almost one out of every 30 cards, not quite. And yes, you're drawing three, and so you'd say, well, you actually have a greater than 10% chance, three cards out of a 90-card deck, of drawing the Nightmares, but because the deck is bigger, I think, I don't know, we need one of our listeners that's a true statistician to come in here and prove me wrong, and that's fine if they do.
But there was a Card Game DB article, actually, that went over some of these percentages.
Okay.
I don't recall them off the top of my head, but you can go look it up sometime and see. They've already been talked over some.
So, I mean, my gut feel, though, is that and again, if I'm wrong, I'm wrong, is that a Long Voyage deck will have more difficulty drawing into very specific answers. Because a Long Voyage deck is built on the premise is that every card is kind of equal. I'm willing to build an 85-card deck because I think card 85 is just as important as card 1. Okay, which means a combo deck, which doesn't live on that premise at all, you know, in order for a combo deck not to work, it's got to either get disrupted or it doesn't draw into its pieces. Okay, which means...
they can be their own worst enemy.
Yes.
We saw that game one today, but carry on. Different topic.
So maybe that is one of the metagame solutions, is decks, maybe more uber character decks. Okay, like the maybe we see more Brotherhood, because Long Voyage deck's ability to deal with Brotherhood feels like it's not going to, you know, be able to as much.
Mm-hmm.
It just may not be able to dig down deep enough to get to each of its answers for that. Maybe we see...
Brotherhood seems like a fairly good point, because it can be fairly tempo to aggro itself to kind of compensate. I'm a little worried about slower combo stuff or less durable pieces, because all this TLB stuff we're seeing so far is pretty hard on the rush or aggro end of things. And combos can have some trouble holding up against that if the other person puts too much pressure on.
Well, I think the other thing we're seeing is that a lot of these TLV decks have I think their plot deck is very tight. And, you know, we played some games today, particularly with my Targ deck, and by the time we were done, I wasn't happy with the plot deck. I didn't feel like it was successfully moving me, you know, towards my win condition very well. And I think, you know, in a TLV deck where you have this bigger, you have this 85-card deck, but you still have your same 7-card plot deck, which means you still have the same quality of control over how your plots are resolved, which means to me it's even that much more important that you have this really tight plot deck that plays very well together. You know, I know a lot of people have messed around with Bruno's deck that he won the California Regional with, the Baratheon Rush Long Voyage deck. And 90% of the people I've talked to don't realize how the plots are supposed to work in that deck. Like, even Daryl, who played it, I kept telling Daryl, you got to open with Art of Seduction. Stick your opponent on their plot so you know you have this nearly free second turn to go hog wild with that deck.
Uh-huh.
And I think he did it once and in the tournament in Tulsa.
He just kept wanting to experiment.
Yeah, kept doing other stuff. And I'm like, you've got to understand how intimately the plot deck will work with that deck, with the Long Voyage, and make sure you build an uber tight plot deck that does exactly what you want to do. Maybe you're playing a Lannister Neil Long Voyage deck. Okay, well, however you want to build your plot deck to accentuate that, maybe you want more Neil by playing some city plots, maybe you want to go the other way around, okay, and play a different type of control, like run multiple resets with Valor and Wildfire and March to the Wall or something like that. The point being is, I think with a Long Voyage deck, and I think we're seeing this with some of the winning decks, is that they just have a real solid put together plot deck, and that you look at the 7 plots and you're like, there's no wasted plots in there. There's no plot that has a mediocre ability that isn't really helping you. You know, there's no plots that are in there just for gold. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. You're not seeing
If that's the only thing that you can dictate, then you better be dictating some good stuff.
Yes. So, you know, the person who I was talking to, you know, mentioned the possibility of Brotherhood and mentioned the possibility of combo decks. Maybe the other thing is plot manipulation. There's not a lot of plot manipulation in this game, but there are some. Baratheon has some through Marjorie and Lords of the Narrow Sea.
Yep.
There is the Citadel event that lets you or forces you or your opponent to switch plots.
Yep.
There is Bran Stark. That's your own plots, of course. There is what's the plot that you can play?
I'm hearing Barrett or Stark Maesters is all I'm getting right now.
it's an option.
Yeah.
Maybe it's not a grand option, and more specific.
It's an option. I was running a couple copies of that plot cycling Maester event in my deck at Moonboy. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just as it's really handy on, say, turn one against Knights of the Hollow Hill to force them out of First Snow Winter, there's a lot of other situations where it can do similar work.
Mm-hmm. So I don't know if our listeners have some more solutions that they've been thinking of in their mind of how to combat against the long voyage and its, you know, prevalence in the winner circles of regionals and large tournaments. Feel free to send them in. We can discuss them. I mean, we've just talked about a couple kind of narrow ones here, like Brotherhood or plot manipulation. But I think that there are some others. And I think it's important, you know, as a group of players to think of those things instead of just saying, oh, we hate the long voyage, don't want to use it, but I feel like I have to if I want to win. I hate that line of reasoning. I'd rather say, if you don't want to play it, don't play it, and think about what you can do against it. You know what I mean? Maybe our options aren't great right now what to do against it, but I'd still rather think about it.
Okay. Sounds good to me. I'm open to suggestions. If anybody wants to email the show and get in on that, make sure you send a message over to twochampsonechump@gmail.com or track us down on Facebook. Same thing, facebook.com/twochampsonechump. All those are the digits. And honestly, that's probably where most of the discussion happens when like Daryl posts a status update or something. But you can also track us down on CardGameDB as we post new episodes and post in the response thread there. So,
and if you disagree, like Will said, get on there. Tell me how wrong I am. I'm.
Everyone loves telling Greg how wrong he is. Unfortunately, we're just never right.
So, little update, little section maybe we'll call breaking news for this podcast. Just a couple days basically after we recorded, we had a new spoiler go up for the next Thrones chapter pack that I think pretty heavily alters the discussion that Greg and I just had that you just heard. So what card was that we had spoiled here, Greg?
Dagger Lake.
Close. Dagger Lake Galley.
Dagger Lake Galley. Sorry, I'm not looking at the card. I'm not actually looking at the spoiler right now.
Oh, okay.
Well, but
maybe I should read it then, just in case. For the listeners,
yeah, why don't you go ahead and do that if you have it in front of you?
Yeah, for the listeners that are also may not be looking at it right this second, it is a neutral, non-unique location. It is a warship. And any phase, kneel Dagger Lake Galley to choose a unique character you control. That character gains a naval enhancement on the icon of your choice until the end of the phase.
You know, our listeners just got done listening to our discussion on Black Sails, and of course you and I are now having this discussion several days afterwards and recording it and putting it on the podcast. You know, one of the things that I've always liked about the Stark Black Sails deck prior to this warship was their warship, the White Harbor Dromund, and the flexibility that gives you in regards to throwing anybody into a naval challenge, essentially. And, you know, the Dagger Lake Galley does the same thing. The only difference is it costs one less and it doesn't grant renown. You know, and it doesn't, well, I guess White Harbor Dromund technically gives it to all three, if I remember correctly.
Yes.
Again, I don't have it here in front of me. Maybe it doesn't. I've
got it in front of me. It gains a naval enhancement on each icon that it does have.
Okay, and Dagger Lake Galley, essentially, you are just choosing one icon and giving it,
right,
to that character. So.
One other key difference on top of that, though, that I know has thrown you off with the Dromund before when you were trying it out in that Stark deck, because if I remember right, you were using some Epic Battles as well for extra potential triggers of the Black Sails. But the Dromund is just a challenges phase effect. Dagger Lake Galley is any phase.
Yeah, that is actually very nice. And that was something I discovered in the midst of actual games when I'd get to an epic phase with my Stark deck and realize, oh, I can't use my White Harbor Dromund that I'd left around for the epic phase.
Mm-hmm.
And it also creates another interesting dynamic with the epic phase is the Black Sails agenda. If you can pull off the, you know, win a naval enhancement challenge during the normal challenge phase and then do it again, during the epic phase, you get to search twice. Okay. But you know, the ability to have a standing naval character to do the naval enhancement challenge, particularly two phases later, you know, is just even that much more difficult. But again, with the Dagger Lake galley, I think that there's a chance you might see more opportunities for it. We're not talking like huge, massive opportunities, but you know, you've gone from maybe a 5% chance of being able to pull off a naval enhancement challenge during the epic phase to, you know, now maybe you're at 15 or 20% if you have this location out.
Yeah. Still a noticeable improvement, I would say.
Right.
I mean, and just in general, being able to pull off the naval enhancement challenges for Black Sails decks, this is a huge boon to them. You know, we were just saying a little while ago that we thought the Stark one was probably the most effective right now because of their Droman. I mean, when you can add this in, Stark will probably still be in the lead, but this pull certainly, I would think, pulls Greyjoy and Baratheon up to the level that Stark was before this was released. Maybe it makes Lannister and Targaryen start looking pretty tempting.
Prior to this getting spoiled, I was actually looking at the possibility of running White Harbor Droman out of house.
Right.
You know, and I'm like, dang, that's four. It ends up being a four cost location in these other houses, but I just thought it was that good. Of course, this gets spoiled, and I'm like, oh, I don't need to do that anymore. Now I can throw in this one cost non unique warship that, you know, does essentially the same thing for me. The renown is nice on White Harbor Droman, but, you know, it's not necessary. So, right now, like our previous discussion on Black Sails, right, for me was really, testing. Our discussion of Dagger Lake Galley is theoretical. I'm hoping that the inclusion of it in Black Sails decks is going to make them more consistent and more powerful. We'll see. Maybe here in a few weeks or at the end of regional season after I've done more testing, you know, we'll see if it, you know, plays out that way, and it may not. So,
I mean, there's always still that random factor to consider. You could wind up with them all in the hold or something, but just theoretically speaking, like you said, I think Dagger Lake Galley may kind of single-handedly be the card that those decks need, you know, to function. Like the one that finally gives that critical mass. Since it's so flexible, basically everything we were saying about the Droman applies as far as being able to time it so that you get around the vast majority of the control effects that your opponent can use to keep your naval guys out.
Yeah, and that's a nice thing. You know, if you are playing a control deck and you go against someone running Black Sails, you're obviously just attempting to control their naval enhancement guys, either kneel them or remove their icons or Black Sails them or Black Sails, not Black Sails. Whatever sort of method you want to use to prevent that character from doing something, fishing net, whatever. But with this new location, you have to control all but one, essentially, or if you can, you know, if they have a very different icon spread, you know, maybe you just need to control, you know, a couple characters that have similar icons so that they can't throw someone in. But that becomes a much more difficult proposition, particularly when you're potentially talking about a board of, you know, maybe 4 to 8 characters that, you know, someone might have. So I think it's just going to add a ton of versatility, and I hope we end up seeing that fleshed out in actual gameplay.
Yeah, well, maybe it'll be out in time. I mean, we're recording this in the middle of the week. There's still the chance that we could see a chapter pack here, you know, between now and our regional. And according to the official FFG rules, once a pack's released, it's legal. Do you think there's any chance of us seeing this at Meta before the regional? And if so, are we going to play with it?
I mean, there's a chance the pack is out, sure. I mean, do I think people are going to be playing Black Sails at our regional? Probably not. I think the hotness, as we've discussed previously, is Long Voyage right now. And, you know, if you pinned me down and said, you know, Greg, what are we going to see agenda-wise? I'm going to say lots of Long Voyage.
Are you going to play the Long Voyage?
No.
Okay, good man. Neither am I.
Yeah, you know me. Whatever the new hotness is, I refuse to play it. It's just, that's just how I roll.
Greg, can I give you a challenge?
Sure.
Play City of Shadows, because essentially no one has played it this tourney season.
Okay, done.
All right.
What do I get if I win with it?
My undying gratitude?
I already have that. What else do I get?
No. You have the perishable variety of gratitude right now. If it sits on the shelf too long, it's going to spoil.
So many bad jokes in response to that. I'm just going to eat them all right now. So
you better eat them before they spoil. Well, I guess aside from that, we can move on. There was a little bit of other breaking news that's probably relevant to bring up.
Yeah, for those of you that, you know, potentially keep track of, you know, regionals or nationals across the country or in other countries, there was some interesting developments in the French national. First, they had a butt ton of people.
Yeah.
Goodness gracious, another tournament over in Europe that breaks 100. I mean, props to them. Yeah,
90 some odd for Melee, and I think 113 for Joust.
Yeah, I mean, just phenomenal numbers. And, I mean, I'm jealous of those numbers, to be honest.
Yeah, holy cow.
But that's not why we felt the need to rush and have an add-on segment to our normal podcast. If you hadn't heard, there was, some sportsmanship, issues. Apparently a particular, well, number one, I guess they had some live streaming video, and I'll just say up front, I have not watched the video. Have you watched it?
I've watched some of the video. The relevant portions, some folks on Agot Cards were kind enough to timestamp those so that you could go find them in the feed. So I watched some on Sunday, and I was not watching them live as things happened. This was after the fact. And now, since then, the videos have been taken down. There was some speculation about that at first. Someone wound up posting over there on AGI Cards that evidently Justin TV takes them down after a set amount of time, unless you have a paid account. So likely that's what happened.
Right. Well, I mean, I really have no desire to, you know, share the guy's name and throw him under the bus. Trust me, it's not going to take you very long of doing some searches on the internet to, you know, find out who this guy was and what he did and that sort of thing. Really what I'm more interested in talking about is, you know, is the fallout from this. You know, obviously we have the incident that happened at the World Championships last year and the discussion and controversy of, you know, what collusion looks like in terms of players working together on the Melee scene. Well, what happened out in France is during the Joust game, basically, a player was doing sleight of hand. It was caught by people watching the live feed. It was not something that a player was accused of like in the middle of a game, it was actually, you know, people discussing this on the live feed in the, you know, in the message board chat area underneath the live feed. And then somehow it was brought to the attention of the, you know, the TOs running the tournament. Of course, it was brought to their attention several rounds after the live feed had caught it. But the guy doing it was basically doing some sleight of hand of, you know, moving cards, you know, looking at the bottom of his deck, moving them to the top of his deck, not giving his deck to the opponent to give them an opportunity to shuffle, so on and so forth. I had read that there was some accusation of marked cards. I cannot confirm that. That's just what I read. But we have the situation of someone getting caught doing it because of the live feed, and then the player drops out of the tournament. And my first thought was this. If this had happened a year ago, before FFG had their two-page sportsmanship document, do the TOs have enough strength or authority to kick this person out?
Technically, I would say yes, because the tourney rules basically said the TOs can do whatever they want, whenever they want.
Right.
Is there necessarily the impetus for them to do any particular thing, though? That part, I don't know.
Well, not only is there not the impetus, but you potentially have a greater controversy. Let's say judges or the TOs do kick him out, and dude says, okay, fine, you caught me. And again, this is all hypothetical, okay? Dude says, okay, fine, whatever, you know, but I haven't broken any rules because, hey, there is no rules. I'm shuffling my deck the way I want to shuffle it.
Right.
You know, and there was technically no shuffle rules, you know, in regards to sportsmanship. And, you know, you potentially have a big controversy. Now, I think it's one of those common sense things that even a year ago before there was this sportsmanship rule, most people would probably look at that and say, dude cheated. I mean, seriously. You know, you cheated, you got caught, whatever. But I will say this, that I believe the sportsmanship rules and the two-page document don't leave room for arguments. They don't leave room for ambiguity. And even though I know a lot of people complained about them and a lot of people, I heard people say, man, this stuff is just obvious. You know, this is like no-duh stuff. But even in the thread of after it happened, there were people defending the player, you know, saying, no, I don't really think so. Or people say, no, he's a great guy, you know.
Right.
I mean, really, that kind of stuff was happening. And, you know, it.
Well, and there were some people also saying like, I think it was an accident. I don't think it was intentional and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, so I just think it was one of those things that after it happened, I said, I'm sad for the French tournament. I'm glad they at least caught it before it was the final game. Now, granted, the information was out before the top 32, but the TOs just did not have enough time to, you know, read what was going on the chat log on Justin TV and then implement something. By the time they got together and discussed it and decided on something, the player dropped and it was at the Elite Eight. I'm at least glad they caught it then instead of at the end. And, you know, it's such an interesting thing, just in the sense that we have now had two significant controversies, one that happened, you know, at World Championships, one that happened here. And this is less a controversy and more of a black mark. Do you know what I mean?
Okay.
Worlds is a controversy. People arguing, is what they did wrong? No, it's not. They're pointing out a flaw in the system. No, these guys are douchebags. I mean, everyone had a different opinion on it. For the most part, everyone who's aware of went on and what went on in France are pretty much thinking, yeah, this guy's in the wrong. You know, it was clearly cheating. You know, whether he got kicked out or dropped out, whatever, the fallout is going to be specific to him. You know, like, is he not allowed to at future events? You know, does he just drop out of the game getting caught doing something like this? Who knows? But the fallout is probably just specific to him. So, you know,
maybe it is. I don't know. I mean, I'm sure I hate to really think about it, but I'm sure it's not the only time this sort of thing has happened. I'm certain in the, you know, decades worth of history the game has, and however many hundreds of tournaments have been played around the world in that amount of time, there are other people doing this. And this brings it to light, brings it to my mind. Like, you know, we had the Star Wars regional in Springfield a couple weeks ago, and there was a guy who every opponent he played, when the deck was offered to him, he took it and shuffled it and handed it back. And when I played against him, personally, that was infuriating. Like, I understand the reasoning, but for whatever reason, an opponent actually shuffling my deck is infuriating. But then this sort of thing happens, you know, the week after that, and now, you know, it's kind of on my mind, you know, just in case, you know, there's kind of this push that now I need, well, I should have been vigilant to begin with, I'll say, but there's this extra kind of drive, like, I need to really be watching what my opponent is doing all the time, you know? I can't just rely on this kind of fraternal, good old boy, hey, we're all here to play under the same rules kind of understanding.
You know, and I agree with you. The interesting thing is that I know most of the people I play with. I trust most of the people I play with. Now, I mean, as we mentioned, there's a lot of people that knew this guy who, you know, committed these acts in France, and they were surprised by it. They're like, oh, I know this guy. He's a great guy. You know what I mean? Like, right. Imagine, I'm just gonna pick the, you know, the person I think would never do this. Let's say I'm playing against Bruno.
Yes.
Right? I love Bruno. He's a great guy. I think he's one of the most stand-up guys in the game. Okay? I would never think he would ever do something like that. Ever, 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 ever. So, like, sitting in a table across Bruno, I'm not gonna watch his deck. I'm not gonna intentionally shuffle his deck. There's a chance I may not even cut his deck. You know, I may just tap it or whatever, you know, and say, you're good. And he's the extreme example, but there are many, many people I play with that I trust, that I care about in this game, that I would never think that they would do anything like that. And I think most of the people within the community of this game feel the same way, that they say, you know what? I think 99.9% of the people I play with don't do this. Now, maybe we are too optimistic. Maybe we are giving people too much of the doubt, but, or the benefit of the doubt, excuse me. And maybe we do have to watch, but at the same time, that starts to take away part of the fun for me, is feeling like when I sit across the table from someone, I have to at least devote some portion of me, even if it's a small portion, to making sure they are not cheating.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess I am going to be feeling that need for a while. But I understand it's going to be a fairly personal thing for all the people. But, you know, it's kind of to protect the integrity of everything as a whole. You know, like, for instance, this happens. Somebody gets caught say it's that first round of 32 or whatever. Somebody gets kicked out or quits or whatever it might be. But, you know, there's so many other people that were affected by that. Opponents that were beaten in the rounds of Swiss. Maybe another guy that was on the cusp of making the cut who didn't now. And, you know, TOs will handle that different ways, but I'm thinking many of them are not going to backtrack a tournament. you know, undo rounds, repair, re-rank, and that sort of thing. And, you know, the earlier anybody can catch an error or an intentional, I don't know, issue, we'll say, the less people it affects. So it's just good for everybody as a whole, I think. I don't know. My comment in the end, I guess, is be vigilant. Only you can prevent forest fires.
Okay, so we have a regional coming up. By the time our listeners are listening to this, it is essentially within a week. This will be posted on Friday the...
Or just, it'll be exactly a week, I guess. Yeah. Since it'll be posted this coming Friday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And or those listening to it are saying Friday. It is this Friday, as in today. Unless they're listening to it after Friday. Then they're going to say past Friday.
It's going to be really awkward. And if someone listens to this like 6 months from now, it's really going to mess with their heads.
Okay, so regional Springfield, Missouri. Did you end up assigning a name to it?
You know, I kind of liked Daryl's suggestion. I believe it was Into the Breach, a Midwestern Battle for the Throne. So, okay. I kind of like the sound of that.
All right. Well, it is Memorial Day weekend. Friday evening at 7 o'clock, we will be having a melee tournament. There will be prizes from the regional kit on the line for the melee tournament. I'm not sure it's going to cost anything, though. I have not talked to the store, but I think the costs are going to go to the actual championship event. So you have the possibility of coming in. I need to double check this with the store.
Winning regional prizes without paying.
Yes, I think so. I need to double check this with the store, but we'll see. At most, I'm hoping it's only $5.
We have some lead kit stuff, too, so maybe we can use some Alt Art Valors or something.
Okay.
We'll have prizes around for sure.
So we will have some melee on Friday night. This is different for us because we normally count both events towards our championship, but for this regional, we will not be doing that. But hopefully it is still a lot of fun, still competitive fun. Have a good time. Hopefully see you guys there. Saturday, noon, Joust. This is the championship event at Metagames. Most likely it'll be 5 rounds of Swiss, unless we get ungodly amounts of numbers, but I'm guessing right now, probably mid-20s. Okay? 5 rounds of Swiss, followed by a cut to top 8 for single elimination, with the winner of single elim winning the Into the Breach championship.
Yeah.
Now,
winning the trophy and all.
This is kind of a blur into props and slops, but I have a new house.
I'm in it right now.
This is Will's first time in my new house. Initial impressions.
It is impressive.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate that very much. What about initial impressions on size?
Massive. Oh, am I supposed to say more than like one word for each of these answers?
Well, no. I mean, I just wanted to make sure you understood I was asking about the house and not my penis.
No. Oh, believe me, I know that difference.
Okay.
Minuscule. I understand the confusion. They're both M words. Minuscule is actually in reference to the penile. Okay.
Well, point being is plural. I now have a very large house. I have beds, not counting my own bed and myself sleeping here. I have beds for 8 people. I have a couch that can sleep another 2. I have 3 or 4 inflatable mattresses and a ton of floor space for people that... If we end up with...
He has a mostly empty living room.
Yeah, I don't even have enough furniture to fill up all my rooms, okay?
What a terrible, terrible problem to have.
What I'm saying is this. If you are listening to this podcast and you are wanting to come to our regional but have not made arrangements to do so, and you're sitting there thinking, I want to come, but where am I going to stay? Your job, listener, is to get a hold of me. And you can do it through all the information Will's already given you on the 2 champs and a chump multitude of different ways to get a hold of us. Let me know. And I'll be happy to put you up here. I will have some food and some drink for those that are staying here. Generally, it's sandwich stuff to make something for lunch and some breakfast stuff when waking up on Saturday morning or Sunday morning. We sometimes will, you know, have some beers or other alcohol, depending on, you know, what other people bring to add to, you know, what's already here.
Yep.
And it's a good time. It's a place to stay. You can practice games on Friday night or after Saturday. You know, it's just a place to crash before you drive back on Sunday. Really, I just want to make sure anyone who is thinking about coming doesn't let, say, the cost of a hotel or the inability, you know, like when they think about, oh, we're not going to end till maybe 9 o'clock on Saturday night or 10 o'clock and I have a 6-hour drive and I don't want to drive late at night. Good. Don't come and hang out at Dobler's place. You can drive back Sunday morning.
And now I have been counting. Let's see. This will be what, episode 7 of the show tomorrow. Then 8 next week. 9, I guess. Yeah, that was how it worked out last year for our regional, wasn't it? It was the penultimate episode, and we had the little watch party, and everybody was sitting around together and watched Blackwater.
Oh,
it was
yeah. Really awesome. Yeah.
Will we be able to do that again this year and see the penultimate episode, which I think is going to be really awesome?
I think we probably can. I mean, my kids will be here, so we'll...
right.
That's okay, though. I mean, I think those people that are still in town on Sunday nights... can hang around and watch the episode. Most of the people that are traveling from far away, I understand they'll have to be on the road already. But, you know, those of you that are maybe traveling from Neosho, Joplin, somewhere that's maybe just an hour or two, you know, staying and watching the show.
Or someone that just wants to take Monday off. And
yeah, the problem is all my beds will be filled. Not all the beds, half of them, because my kids will be back and they're going to want their own beds back.
Shucks.
But my open doors on my house, please let me know, and we'd love to have you.
Props and slops?
All right. Props. Okay, this is all related to moving, since I just moved into this place last weekend. I spent a lot of money on this house. A lot more than I expected to, fixing it up before I moved in.
Uh-oh.
However, one thing of spending money I have no regrets of, and it was the best money I spent. I hired 2 men in a truck to move my stuff. And yes, it ended up costing me $700, okay, which seems like a lot of money.
Yeah.
At the same time, I am so thankful I did. I think it was worth every penny. Not having to move the stuff myself and hurt my back and bang the walls. And I just get this brand new house. The last thing I want is just streak marks all over every other wall from banging all my furniture on it. And yeah. I have a hallway that's kind of tough to navigate to upstairs. And I have stairs. And trust me, when I watched the 2 men in a truck guy move my ping pong table downstairs, and it's not a walkout basement, okay? So they had to bring it down the stairs. They were sweating by the time they got it down. And I'm sitting there watching them saying, that alone was worth $200. Like, not having to move that ping pong table downstairs was worth $200 all on its own.
Oh, I've moved ping pong tables before at our church's Life Center from upstairs. From, let's see, two sets of stairs, really, because we moved it from the main floor up to the, like, AV balcony and then up those stairs to the youth room at the top. And it's not fun.
Yeah. Slops go to just moving in general. It sucks. It's nice having a new place, but just having to go through the move process is horrible. I hate it, and I hope I don't have to do it again for a long, long time. Anything for you?
I'm going to throw some props out to The Great Gatsby. Kristen and I went and watched it last night, and it was great, if you pardon the pun. It was a visual feast.
Is that a pun, really?
Sort of. The Great Gatsby.
It feels more like it was a redundancy.
Maybe.
A lack of imagination in terms of adjectives.
I like redundancy. That's why, I don't know. I was about to say that's why I don't run TLV, but maybe you need more redundancy in a TLV deck. So, yeah, never mind. I don't know. It's whatever. But it was a visual feast, and it was just really good. I've really started to like Leonardo DiCaprio over the last, say, 4 or 5 years, like, mm-hmm. kind of after he cast off his, Titanic reputation, I guess you could say. So I really liked him. Tobey Maguire was good. What's her name? Girl playing Daisy. I don't remember. She's not someone I've heard much about. But yeah, just the whole thing was really cool, really good. I saw it in 3D, which was a waste.
Yeah, I don't. Why did they even make it in 3D?
I don't know. There was.
Why did you choose to watch it in 3D?
Since I had to drive to Springfield after work, I got to Kristen's at like 7:30.
Okay.
She was still getting ready. We didn't go to Outback till 8. By the time we got, you know, food and everything done at Outback, it's 10 o'clock. And actually, I think it was a little after. It may have been 10:15. And that was the last showing,
okay,
basically. The 10:45 was a 3D. There was exactly one scene, I think, where that mattered. And I guess mattered is not the right term. Where it looked cool, there's some snow coming at you in the opening scene. And that looked cool. And that was about it.
Speaking of props and speaking of Leonardo DiCaprio, a few weeks ago, I watched Django Unchained.
I
loved it.
But I can't bring myself to watch it.
Oh, my goodness. I loved that movie. And, like, I am not someone that just worships Tarantino. Like, especially, I watched Pulp Fiction several times when I was in high school. Some of his earlier things really don't strike me as, I mean, Four Rooms, I'm like, meh. And then the one that came before Pulp Fiction that I'm totally mind-blanking on, where all the guys had the color names like Mr. Purple and Mr.
Reservoir Dogs.
Reservoir Dogs.
See, that's about the only one that I'm okay with.
I loved Django Unchained. I loved it. But I also do like, what's his name, Christopher Waltz, I think. He's the one that was up for the Academy Award for the movie.
Oh yeah, I didn't watch the Academy Awards this year.
Now, did you see his other one, the World War II movie, the
Inglourious Basterds?
Yes.
No, I didn't watch it.
Oh my goodness, those two, Inglourious Basterds and Django Unchained, are actually my favorite Tarantino movies.
See, and here's the problem. Okay, I watched a few Tarantino movies. I liked Reservoir Dogs well enough. Pulp Fiction was all right. And then a friend who worships Tarantino drug me to Kill Bill.
Oh, well, Kill Bill's horrible!
And I almost... Don't get me wrong. This is a guy that's been my friend since second grade, okay? And he loves it. And I almost walked out during the credits. The opening credits drove me so crazy I almost left. Which would have caused no end of shitstorm in our friendship, I'm sure. And I have not watched a Tarantino movie since. I don't want to. I have no desire to.
You cannot judge. Kill Bill is horrible.
I think I'm done with Michael Bay, too. I watched the first Transformers film that he did. And I think I'm just done with Michael Bay.
Now, I still enjoy the Transformers, but I recognize what I'm getting into when I watch them. I'm getting
into a steaming pile of shit.
I'm getting into an action movie that's about talking robots. How much
but
can you reasonably
can't understand any of the action?
Nah.
His filmography is terrible. I can't tell what's going on.
Anyways, I love the last two Tarantino movies. I really do. And Christopher Waltz is great.
It's totally not the word I wanted.
I think his name's Christopher Waltz. I need to double check that. Waltz.
I do love Christopher Walken.
No.
Oh. Shucks.
So anyway, I know you don't like Tarantino. I think you should really try Django Unchained. Okay, here's the thing. I didn't go to the Redbox to rent that movie. I went to the Redbox and just said, what have I not seen? Blah, 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 blah. I haven't seen Django Unchained. I guess I'll get it. You know what I mean? I did not specifically go to get it.
Right.
I put it in, and by the time I was done, I literally thought, should I keep this movie long enough to watch it again tomorrow? I'm not joking. I liked it that much. Okay? I think you should try.
I can't remember the last movie I saw that caused that reaction. It may have been Super Troopers. If I remember right, actually, Super Troopers... Andy. Remember Andy?
Yeah.
He's the guy that We discovered that movie together. We were looking to rent something. We got Super Troopers, watched it, just, couldn't hardly breathe. We were laughing so hard. But it was still fairly early in the night. It was, I don't know, it was summer after high school or whatever. And so we took it back to the movie store, got a different one. I think we got Bubble Boy, if I remember right, with John Leguizamo. But I think that was who it was anyway. Watched it, and we were like, that was terrible. And we were like, well, crap, it's only like 8 o'clock. What do we do now? Let's go get Super Troopers again. So we actually went back and re-rented it and watched it again that same night.
That's really funny. That's funny. So anyways, I'm still giving props to Django Unchained. I really liked it. So anyways.
Yeah.
All right.
That's all I got for right now.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, guys. The ghost.